Hello, and welcome to Silver Threads, a weekly program of information on how you can make your senior year shine. I'm Kathy Van Skoik. Humor, and laughter in particular, as the Reader's Digest tells us, is the best medicine. If that's true, then the July issue of AARP has our good health in mind. From its focus article on Steve Martin, to George Carlin, Buddy Hackett, Moms Mabley, Mary Steenburgen, David Hasselhoff, and others, plus laughter yoga, the magazine sets out to entertain us and offer us just a bit of the serious side as well. Articles include AARP's editor-in-chief Robert Love's offering, Funny Never Gets Old, the magazine cover story on Steve Martin, Looking Sharp, Why the Classiest Comic Changed His Life, pictures him smiling, a silver-haired Martin, getting a haircut with swirls of dark hair adorning the barber's bib. Took me a while to get the humor there. Other articles include a smiling Mary Steenburgen, pictured standing, supposedly playing an accordion, Mary's playing our song, David Hasselhoff, and a few short pieces that include Alan Alda, Teller of Penn and Teller, and an admonition to laugh every day. Funny never gets old. Let's celebrate the brave, crazy souls who make us laugh for a living. Dying is easy, comedy is hard. Maybe you've heard that one before. Nobody's quite sure who said it first, but all stand-up comics vouch for its veracity. Live comedy is difficult, dangerous work. Comics kill when they succeed and die when they don't. It's life and death up on the stage all by yourself. Like most kids in the 50s and 60s, I discovered my capacity for laughter in the choreographed violence of the Three Stooges and the Roadrunner cartoons. But my first exposure to stand-up was the Ed Sullivan Show. I fell off the living room couch laughing on many Sunday nights, but I was also educated by Ed's love for comics of all backgrounds. How else would a boy from the suburban Long Island ever get to sample the raunchy rhythms of Moms Mabley, who was born in the 19th century and made her comedy bones in black vaudeville, what was called the Chitlin' Circuit? Moms often worked her routines around aging. It's no disgrace to be old, but damn if it isn't inconvenient. But her shtick often relied on an older woman's naughty and disruptive admiration of younger men. I remember George Carlin's character, the hippy-dippy weatherman, and his thinky-blinky stoned forecast. Continued dark overnight and widely scattered light by morning. I loved Shecky Green, Buddy Hackett, and the Borscht Belt Brotherhood, who honed their timing at resorts in the Catskills, a.k.a. the Jewish Alps. We grant comedians the license to talk to us about sensitive subjects like race, Richard Pryor, spinsterhood, Joan Rivers, being a man, Jerry Stiller, being a woman, Phyllis Stiller, and being a man and a woman, Flip Wilson. In return, they give us something invaluable, another point of view, usually that of the outsider, which can sometimes be familiar or sometimes discomforting, but usually pretty funny. Again, that was Robert Love, editor-in-chief. And now, the three stages of Steve Martin's journey to happiness. He fought through panic and pain, and now, back on stage again, and a late-life father, he's found the path to real happiness. No kidding, by Judith Newman. Try for a moment to imagine the horror of being Steve Martin's manager in 1981, the year he abruptly quit stand-up comedy. You're the most famous comedian on the planet, Steve. You're filling 45,000-seat stadiums every night, and you're just going to, what? What are you thinking, Steve? Imagine, too, what the world would look like if Martin had chosen to grow his brand, as they call it now, King Tut souvenir shops, wild and crazy menswear stores, and a three-decade residence in the Las Vegas Strip, his own streaming TV channel. His friend, the writer Dave Barry, still marvels at Martin's willingness to gamble. Here's a guy who was the number one non-musical live act in the world. He could easily have kept that going till today, Barry points out, but he's a restless guy. Of course, Martin didn't exactly vanish when he ditched the throngs lining up to see his arrow through the head bit. He went on to try his hand in movies as one of the preposterous Three Amigos, as a frantic father of the bride, as the heroic modern-day Cyrano. He has also written novels, recorded bluegrass albums with Eddie Brickell, and toured the country playing banjo with the Steep Canyon Rangers Band. Oh yes, he's written plays too, including a new comedy about marriage, Meteor Shower. But recently, Martin decided to return to his roots. He has been touring the country with his longtime friend Martin Short, a fellow amigo, in a show called An Evening You Will Forget for the Rest of Your Life. Stand-up comedy, banjo music, and sharp frenemy ribbing on stage. The actress and comedian Catherine O'Hara describes the act as a children's show for adults. Crowds love not only the nostalgic jokes and characters, but the new, sometimes improvised material that Martin and Short bring to the stage. It's the first time in all of these years, Martin says, that he has truly loved performing. He and his old friend have an understanding. We have very similar boundaries with each other, which are none. Even after 5 movies and countless evenings together, Short is still tickled by Martin's combination of wit and silliness. We were going to a party after the Oscars together, and Steve was tweeting, and I said, "Come on, what are you doing?" And he just tweeted, "I'm going to the Vanity Fair party, and I hope to meet Cher, so we can be on a first-name basis." The joke is a bit inside, as well as being silly. Even before his hair turned prematurely gray, Martin was a writer and bit player on the Sonny and Cher Comedy Hour. So this longtime master of reinvention has reinvented himself right back into comedy tour. But this time, he seems to have found a new kind of fulfillment. Martin is reserved by nature, so talking to him is not easy, and he doesn't try to make it easier. When I meet him at the Louisville Palace Theater in March during his Evening You Will Forget tour, he bypasses the comfortable green room set aside for performers, instead insisting he likes the quiet. He leads me up several flights to a tiny, bare garret that has all the warmth of a police interrogation room. I am out of breath, but at 70 he is not. Martin looks virtually the same as he did 30 years ago. The charm, says Short, of looking 70 when you're 30. Tall and slim, Martin moves like a much younger man. I do exercise, but gently, he says. I go on a treadmill and listen to a novel or watch television. I lift weights, but I just do my chest and arms. Having a younger wife and a child, his first, still in preschool, is to Martin a responsibility as well as a pleasure. I do it for myself, he says, but I do it for them as well. One senses he was more than ready for fatherhood, as he wrote not one but 2 children's books before his daughter was born. Performing was always stressful, he recalls. The memory of his stand-up days makes Martin cringe. It was in clubs, and they're seedy, and there's cheap wine and talking and noise. Also, in his youth, he suffered from panic attacks and hypochondria. But in recent years, those feelings stopped. As he jokingly puts it, I worried all those years that I was going to die, and I never did. So why waste all that worry? Many of us become more anxious as we age. Martin has gone into the other direction. And you know, you absolutely do become wiser if you're watching and listening, he adds. Along the way to wisdom, he has also collected accolades, everything from an Emmy for television writing to Grammys for his music and comedy albums to the Kennedy Center Honors for being, well, Steve Martin. His often humorous writing was published in The New Yorker, and his music played Broadway. He has also become a serious art collector, and he excels there, too. In fact, he can move markets, since he championed the Canadian painter Lauren Harris by co-curating a show that traveled the U.S. Prices for the artist's work have skyrocketed. Martin himself once sold an Edward Hopper painting for nearly $27 million. He sells pieces, he says, so he can buy more art. I was born a poor black child. So begins one of Martin's many memworthy lines and the opening to his first major film role, The Jerk. It's a joke, of course. He was not born black, nor was his family poor. The Martins of Waco, Texas, were middle class. His father wanted to be an actor, so when Martin was five, his parents moved him and his older sister to Hollywood. The acting plans didn't work out for Martin's dad, Glenn, who went into real estate and seemed to take his frustrations out on his son, alternately ignoring and criticizing the boy. Wanting to get out of the house, Martin found his first job at age 10, selling guidebooks at Disneyland. He gravitated toward Merlin's Magic Shop in Fantasyland, where he learned tricks. In college, he majored for a time in philosophy, which should come as no surprise to fans of his bizarrely cerebral comedy. Martin developed his onstage persona with the goal of doing comedy where there were no punchlines. No way for the audience to release the tension of the joke. This cracks you up for no definable reason. Though he's been lauded as a comedy genius, Comedy Central once ranked Martin sixth among history's 100 greatest stand-up comedians, with Richard Pryor at the top. Martin says his success came not from innate talent, but from dogged effort, honing his material night after night. I always divide the world up into people who, like Picasso or Oscar Wilde, who seem to have been born with their gifts, and the rest of us who work at what we do, he says. As Martin's star rose, his mother enjoyed his success. He writes about the time they were driving through Beverly Hills and she said, "Get out and walk down the street so I can watch people look at you." But Martin's father simply didn't find him funny. After attending the premiere of The Jerk, Glenn commented, "Well, he's no Charlie Chaplin." It was only in the 1990s, when Martin wrote his first full-length play, that his father became a fan, perhaps because as a non-playwright he didn't feel threatened by his son's success. "He was very proud of the play, Picasso at the Le Pen Agile," Martin says. He pauses and smiles ruefully. "If my father had always said, 'Everything you're doing is just wonderful,' would I have become an artist? Often when I am standing on stage, I believe I'm trying to get my father's attention." Until he was 40, Martin dated an eclectic list of actresses and artists that included Bernadette Peters, the late Carrie Fisher, and the artist Cindy Sherman. He married the actress Victoria Tennant in 1986. They were divorced about 8 years later. In the mid-2000s, Martin met his current wife, Anne Stringfield, while she was a fact-checker at The New Yorker assigned to check one of his pieces. "We talked on the phone for a year before we even met," Martin says. Stringfield is a small-boned alabaster beauty who friends say is deeply shy on first meeting, a trait that perhaps felt familial to Martin as a celebrity introvert. He was the one used to being drawn out. He may have found it intriguing that with Stringfield, the drawing out was his to do. Martin and Stringfield married in 2007 and now have a 4-year-old daughter. "Having a young child at 71 is fantastic," Martin says. "I think if I'd had a child earlier, I would have been a lousy father because I would have misplaced my attention on my career." He is determined not to make the same mistakes his own father did, although the squishy language of paternal love doesn't come easily. "I am very forthcoming with her, and it's great," he says carefully. "She's giving me way more than I'm giving her." He is no longer shy, he says, but he's no glad-hander either, which makes some people think he's aloof. People used to say Johnny Carson was aloof, Martin says. I knew him. He wasn't aloof. He was normal. Like Carson, I don't become instant friends. But the circle of friends Martin does have is large, loyal, and long-standing. He and his wife are known for their dinner parties, which mix old friends and luminaries from art, literature, music, and theater, including Lorne Michaels, Sean Connery, and Dwight Yoakam. He gets together people who really like to talk, says one friend, because he doesn't want to or need to be the center of attention at all times. Asked to describe his life now, Martin does not hesitate. Very, very happy. I mean, it's actually the perfect shape of a life, except for the hard parts in the beginning, the disharmony, panic, pain, with occasional moments of great affection and comedy success. He says it took him a while to figure out that fame doesn't make you successful, not as a human being, not in any real way. Since that lesson, he says, it's been a gentle uphill slope to a real, real happiness. Written by Julie Newman, who also profiled Warren Beatty in the October-November issue, her memoir, To Siri With Love, about raising an average autistic kid, published in August. And moving on now to David Hasselhoff. He has a small part in the new Baywatch movie. Dwayne Johnson takes on his iconic role as Mitch Buchanan. But David Hasselhoff, a.k.a. The Hoff, 64, has plenty else going on almost two decades after hanging up his red bathing trunks. The actor and singer gives us the download on some of his latest career moves. Hoff, the record. Now streaming on Netflix, his mockumentary series features a fictional version of himself. It won an International Emmy Award, Hoff notes, so it's the best comedy in the world. Brad Paisley video. The country superstar asked the Hoff to star in a video for Last Time for Everything, Paisley's nostalgic look at his 1980s childhood. He loved Knight Rider when he was 10, Hasselhoff explains. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. He appears in the summer blockbuster. During filming, he brought his signature Don't Hassle the Hoff t-shirts for everyone on the set. World fan cruise. He can't wait to cruise around Europe with fans in November. One night, he'll screen his 1998 sci-fi film, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's my favorite, he says. And Killing Hasselhoff. Well, the comedy, soon to be released, is about a group of guys who start a celebrity death pool. One tries to off the Hoff, who co-stars, to win. The script was the funniest thing I had ever read, he said. And now to books. Understanding Alan Alda. Actor turned author offers lessons from science and the stage. Most of us are pretty lousy at communicating, particularly when it comes to complex ideas, says Alan Alda, 81. So the actor famous for MASH has written a book to help. If I understood you, would I have this look on my face? He says it's all about using science and empathy to read the other person. We asked for a couple of tips on how to do it right. Be observant. What clues are you getting from their tone of voice? Notice their face muscles, which they aren't even aware they're in control of. Digital empathy works. Mirror the way someone begins their email to you. For example, if they say, Dear Flo, you say back to them, Dear David. If they say, Hi Flo, say, Hi David. Because if they say, Dear, and you say, Hi, you're off on the wrong foot. Well, we're going now to Mary's Playing Our Song. We loved her since Time After Time, but Mary Steenburgen's most recent film looks at a romance and time in a new way. She plays the later life romantic interest to Kevin Kline's widowed character in Dean, which opened in June. I love the exploration of a romantic connection at this age because It is different when you're older, says the actress, 64. You don't play games anymore. They're too costly. We now know life is short. And some information from her. Musical Leap. I'll never fully understand why I wrote my first song 10 years ago. I woke up with an operation with music in my head. I finally stopped worrying about it and just started writing it. Java Jive. In the past years, after years of drinking tea, I have fallen in love with my morning espresso. Whoever has an easier day ahead, she or husband Ted Danson, makes coffee. Sorry, green tea. Root for yourself. We tell our kids to try for what they want. We cheer them on. But at some point, we stop doing this for ourselves. We shouldn't be so quick to close doors. And finally, a healthy vice. I love dark chocolate, 70% and up. I bought 2 bars of it yesterday, and I'm sure they'll be gone by this afternoon. I use it to make myself exercise. If you want that dark chocolate, you have to take the dog for a hike. And now going on to Houdini's handcuffs. For Teller, there's something magical in connecting with the history of his craft. When I was 5, I got very sick with a heart inflammation. I had a long recuperation in front of a newfangled invention called television and would sit watching Howdy Doody. Clarabelle the clown did magic, and I fell passionately in love with this stuff in a way that I have never been able to shake. Magic was a hobby. At men's college in those days, everybody called you by your last name, so I performed under the name Teller. After I graduated, I became a Latin teacher. When I first met Penn Jillette in the spring of 1975, I had tenure, but he had the life, hippieing his way through the world as a street performer. So we became an act. Penn and I are not natively compatible, and we have had enormous fights. But what matters most in a partnership is respect. Mutual respect is what has carried us through 4 decades. Magic is the most nerve-wracking tightrope walk you could possibly imagine, but I never want to retire. I'm better at it than I was when I was in my 30s. Magic is all based on guile, and the more experience you have with being sneaky, the more successfully sneaky you can be. When I became materially comfortable, I started buying old magic books and tricks. The most precious to me are the ones from Houdini. In his day, he was the most famous person on earth. He was an immigrant who, like most even now, came to America for escape. Breaking free of your shackles, that speaks to me. Why surround myself with these objects? I think it has to do with the magic of contagion. A letter is just a letter, but it holds great power if someone you cared about wrote it. When you touch Houdini's handcuffs, you feel magically charged, like there's a connection, a meeting of then and now. It's completely irrational, but I've spent my entire life playing with logic and sense. And we're going on now to Nicole Kidman, who is turning 50. Life looks pretty good for Nicole Kidman these days. She's still ridiculously beautiful, 10 years married to smoking hot country star Keith Urban, and an Oscar winner for 2002's The Hours, with a body of work to die for, including 1995's To Die For, the Australian actress, who also starred in the 1995 action film Batman Forever, has always had her pick of diverse roles. That certainly hasn't changed. She played the wife of a crazy rich abusive businessman in the recent HBO limited series Big Little Lies, which she co-executive produced with pal Reese Witherspoon, among others. Plus, she stars as a Civil War era headmistress in a gothic drama, The Beguiled, in theaters June 23rd. And Long known for her cool composure, she has been less guarded in public lately. Check the internet for her endearingly goofy dancing during Urban's New Year's Eve concert. "Why not?" she said. "At my age, I'm coming into a place where I think, who cares? I can be who I want to be." And now we're going to try this. Laugh every day? Well, we'll see. Whether you giggle politely or guffaw until your face hurts, don't miss out on a daily chuckle. Laughing can give your immune system a temporary boost, ease pain, relax arteries, and offer your torso a mini workout. In a study of people in their late 60s and early 70s, memory improved and stress levels dropped for those who watched 20 minutes of the TV show America's Funniest Home Videos. Laughter is too important to have it depend on hearing a good joke, notes Jeffrey Breyer, director of the Laughter Yoga Institute in Laguna Beach, California. Check out how to get your daily humor fix. Try laughter yoga. With roots in India, this practice has spread across the globe via laughter clubs and online videos. Research it on the web and take a test drive. You can search online for a laughter yoga club near you or invite friends over to try out easy moves you'll find in web videos, such as a waddling like a penguin as you make laughing sounds. Hey, it works. Doing laughter yoga with others has the biggest benefits, Breyer adds. Watch a comedy tonight. Between Netflix, YouTube, and free movies on cable TV, you don't have to leave the house to laugh. Pick something by a comic whom you found hilarious in the past, whether it was Charlie Chaplin, Steve Martin, or Chris Rock. Now here's one. Clap along as you chant, ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. Seriously, just try it. Even better, rope your spouse, kids, or a friend in. This exercise is designed to elicit some of the physical benefits of spontaneous laughter, whether you're in the mood or not. Once you start, you're bound to laugh for real, Breyer says. Well, the solitary clapping ho, ho, ha, ha, ha didn't work for me. Shall I ask someone to join me? My husband, perhaps? No, I don't think so. My poetry group is a good bet. We like to laugh a lot. What about you? Give it a try. Ho, ho, ha, 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 chanting and clapping. Thanks for listening. And until next week, I'm Kathy Van Skoik. You've been listening to Silver Threads, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. The audio producer for the show is Maureen Rich, and I'm Kathy Van Skoik. I hope you'll join me again next week for more information and updates for making the best of your silver years. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show at our website, wxxi.org.